So my name is Andy Windmill. I was born on the 29th of May 1982, and I moved into Perry Common on the 31st of October 2005, and first kind of visited Perry Common about a year earlier. So some good friends of ours, Sam and Hannah Miller, had moved onto the Perry Common estate in 2003, and they'd set up a project called Urban Devotion. And Urban Devotion was all about trying to serve the local community, get to know people, and to really, I guess, try and serve the process of transformation in this community, recognising that for many people, Perry Common had negative connotations, and instead they wanted to see it as a place where young people could thrive, could reach their potential. So they moved onto the estate, had a bunch of young people connect with them in a sort of year out project. They spent a lot of time praying in the community, getting to know people, connecting with the local church, with schools, with local volunteers. But really everything was about serving and listening and finding out what was going on in the community. So my wife Emma and I connected with that about a year later. And I remember walking around Perry Common on a rainy Wednesday afternoon. And if I'm honest, I sort of saw this slightly grey, drab looking place, and yet something strange happened to me. So I suddenly felt my heart being almost captivated by this place. So I'm a Christian, and it sounds like a funny thing to say, but it's almost like I felt God whisper to me something about this place and how he loved this place and how he loved the people in this place. So I can vividly remember standing outside what was then the College High School, which is now North Birmingham Academy. At the time, I think it was something like the second worst school in England and Wales. I think several weeks earlier, a parent had been stabbed at a sports match on the weekend. So it wasn't sort of, you know, a big tourist attraction that people might have looked at and thought, wow, that's amazing. But I stood outside there and I felt my heart really kind of break for that school and for the young people there. And it began this process of me feeling as though I was supposed to live here. And when momentous things happen and you're married, it's important that the momentous thing happens for your wife as well. And so I didn't want to talk or manipulate Emma into sharing this passion with me. So I was really excited when over the next few weeks, the same thing began to happen with her. So I remember on that first day, we visited a drop-in club that Sam had set up in the basement of St. Martin's Church, and meeting some amazing young people. And these were the type of young people that it would be easy to look at and to write off. And I think that's often what happens with young people. But I guess we quickly saw the potential in them. But I can remember one lad, Jordan, who I still know today, who's in his early 20s, so he'd have been maybe 10 at the time. And I was playing pool with him, and I remember him just looking at me, and there was something really vivid about his eyes, and he said, "Are you coming next week?" And at that point I began to understand something more about the community, that there were a lot of young people here who had experienced rejection, had probably actually experienced some good people coming in with good intentions and then quickly moving on. And I think it was at that point that I realised this is a long-term thing for us. So I can make this story very, very long, but I won't. But over the next year, we began to explore more of what it would look like to live here. And we didn't really have lots of money. I was a student, was trying to work out what I wanted to do job-wise, and nothing seemed quite right. And in the end, I remember Sam and I having an interesting conversation where we both approached the other, and basically both felt that we should work together. And so Sam ran this thing called Urban Devotion, which was basically Sam and some volunteers, of which Emma and I were volunteers, and we'd gathered some of our friends as well to connect with that. And Sam got some great relationships with other people in the community. But anyway, I started in the end working for Urban Devotion, and that was in, I think, the summer, early summer 2005. And I've been doing that ever since. So I've been working with children, working with young people. It's looked different at different times. So the first year that Urban Devotion was around, the crime rate dropped dramatically. It dropped by 47% among the juvenile youth, youth crime rate dropped by 47%. So we saw quite a substantial change. Even when Emma and I were first around, we would frequently see burnt out cars on the wreck. We would see groups of young people on street corners who were usually just hanging around on street corners, and yet I think a lot of local residents would view them as being troublemakers, and being honest, sometimes they were. Drug use was quite visible, but we sought not to condemn people, but to get to know them. And so we would go and talk to guys hanging out on street corners. We would get to know them. We would talk to them about their lives. We would just ask some questions and find out what was important to them. We'd invite them to come and hang out in the youth clubs that we ran, and try and respond to their needs. A good example of that is, again, my friend Sam, when he moved in, he met a local lad. And when I say he met a local lad, what I mean is he was carrying things into his new house, and he was in an upstairs window, and he looked down and he saw this local lad and a couple of other lads looking intriguingly at his car. But again, rather than that being the place to shout and to cause an altercation, it became the start of a relationship. And so I won't go into details because I don't want to identify people. But Sam, and then later some of the rest of us, supported this lad onto a training course, and then supported him to start his own business. And so he's a qualified tradesman who has, you know, done lots of great work across the community. And in one sense, that's a picture of how we want things to be in our community, because I grew up just north of London, in a very different background from here. And yeah, I'm a role model to children and young people around here, but there's something incredible when local people become the role models to local people. And so this lad turned his life around, did something really fantastic with his life, and he becomes somebody that others look up to. So that was pretty great. So we moved into the estate in 2005, and we lived up at the top of Whitton Lodge Road, where the buses stop, which is sort of on the edge of the estate in some of the older houses. So it was always a nice walk down the hill to work, and then a very, very steep walk up the hill back from work. But Urban Devotion at the time was based in the old YMCA on Turfbits Lane. And so we built relationships with all the people around there. We were worked on the streets, so we did what we call street level, where we would just simply walk the streets, we would talk to people, we'd be able to respond to problems. And again, it was a different landscape then, so I can remember taking knives off people, trying to peacefully intervene in difficult domestic situations. And you know, this wasn't happening every week, but it wasn't also abnormal. And so we gathered a team that were doing that. We started running sports activities on the local rec, and just did all sorts of things, but very, very relationally. And so for us, prayer was always absolutely central, because we believed that, yeah, we could make a difference through what we did, but actually we believed far more in a God who could make a difference. And so that was almost where our priority was. And we've always been open about our faith, without being pressured about our faith. So when I first visited Perry Common, I reflected that it was raining, it just felt very grey. I think one of the first things I noticed was that I'd been in other so-called disadvantaged areas, and I often saw incredible creativity. So I lived for a year in Montreal in Canada, and in some of the disadvantaged areas you had beautiful artwork, just incredible graffiti. In Perry Common, you didn't have that. There were almost quite clumsy tags, like graffiti tags, on fences, on walls, but there was nothing that almost spoke of creativity. And I was concerned about that, because I thought, actually, this area is great. When I started to meet young people, I thought, they're great. And so it was at this strange time where a lot of the regeneration had physically been done, but it wasn't finished, and the community was fractured. And I guess looking on, and I probably couldn't give you statistical evidence for this, but what I saw was this picture, that in order to regenerate the community, money was an issue. And so we ended up with three types of people living in this community. There were these amazing people that lived here for decades, that loved this community, that were committed to this community, and they'd opted to remain in the community. And then there were people who had been attracted to these nice new homes, and often the homes had been marketed in a slightly clumsy way, and suggested that these were Sutton Coldfield houses, and Sutton's nice, but it's not as nice as Perry Common. It's a very different environment from Perry Common, and there's something distinct about Perry Common, and perhaps some of these people didn't quite get almost the spirit of Perry Common. And then there were a lot of people who had really been written off and who had, you know, probably got some fairly significant issues and had been moved on because they weren't wanted in other parts of the city. And so you had these three distinct groups. And again, in the early 2000s, it was predominantly a white and what probably traditionally people would call a working class culture here. And so some of the things that we were conscious of was racism. And so that racism being targeted towards people from African Caribbean backgrounds, towards Asian backgrounds. But I think what was lovely is that we gradually saw that begin to change. And I think that's probably a word I'd always want to use about Perry Common, is it's not doomed to failure. It's not kind of set in its ways, but we see change all the time. And so we saw that start to change. Yeah, when we first were here, we would frequently see burnt out cars, motorbikes on the wreck. Again, if you spoke to someone in 2016 and asked them whether that happens, they would look at you probably slightly strangely because it really doesn't. We might see one every few years, whereas that was a regular occurrence. I think even around things like graffiti, you tend to see slightly wittier, slightly more colourful graffiti than we did a decade or so ago. Again, as we would walk the streets and meet with people, we would come across people in some pretty desperate situations. So it wasn't unusual to meet a young person contemplating suicide. I can remember a couple of times taking knives off people. And even not so distant past, you know, putting fires out. You know, you'd do that a few times a year on street level. And it, you know, it's not necessarily like malicious arson, but would just be careless kind of fire lighting in a public space, but actually could lead to a real issue. So I think over the last decade there's been a lot of change in Perry Common, which doesn't mean that all the problems have gone. The problems change, but I think what we have seen is a lot of local people become the solutions rather than the problem. And one of our key priorities has always not been for us to be like these heroes that come in and do everything. That's really not how we see ourselves. What we'd love to do is to support, to raise up, to equip young people to be those that, rather than being the ones who have pointed fingers at them, to actually be people who transform their communities, who take ownership and responsibility for their communities. So from a really early stage, we used to do what we call community care projects, which is an incredibly boring title, but basically meant that we would work alongside young people and we'd do litter picks on the wreck, or we would go and garden an elderly person's home, or we would kind of paint some you know, like fence posts and things like that. But we would do practical things with young people to make a difference. And actually what was exciting about that was usually when we started we'd get some grumbles, but by the end usually they'd be inspired by it. And even things as simple as going across to Sycamore Court and sitting with elderly people playing board games. And some of the old ladies were card sharks, and it was an education for some of our young people. Very entertaining to watch. And I vividly remember, again, one of our young people going around this room and asking everybody how old they were. And you sort of sit there thinking, oh man, there's no tact here at all. But actually, the elderly people would laugh and, you know, say, I'm 25, I'm 21, I'm 30. And it would just kind of bridge the generational gap. I'm not one to sugarcoat things, so I'd rather that we're honest and we talk about the good and the bad. So I think one of the things that can frustrate me about Perry Common is I think sometimes there can be an entitlement mentality, which means that we grumble about things and we don't really receive things and are grateful for things. So one of the things that really saddened me in the last couple of years was the way that people responded when a new play area was built for children, and I would have designed it differently, and I think there was a lot of frustration in the community because it had been promised years before, but at the same time I think we should really welcome things and embrace things. So that's a negative about Perry Common, but actually the positive is when you see people help each other, and so We know families who will just go out of their way to support other families in the area. They're not doing it for recognition, but they're doing it because they feel part of the community. So I can remember quite a troubled lad who, again, I'm being careful with details here because I don't want to identify people, but it was his first day at secondary school, and his mum hadn't bought him the right school uniform. And he was sent to school in the wrong school uniform. And this was a lad who'd been bullied and who'd got some fairly significant issues. And just seeing a mum and her daughter just respond compassionately to that situation, they went and they sourced the right school uniform for him and just really supported him and helped him. So I think you can almost see how could Pericommon go wrong, but then you see how Pericommon goes right. And I think what's brilliant is when you see these local heroes and actually those acts of generosity and kindness speak so much more loudly than some of the negative voices. And then you see, again, particularly when you see young people turn their lives around and they start to change the culture and they challenge actually when other people might do something destructive or negative, they do something to really make Pericommon what it is today. So for us, Pericommon, as with many other people, is a labour of love. So I've lived here now for 11 years and have been really active in Pericommon for 12 years. But it's not a job for me. Yeah, I have a job here that practically serves this community. But actually, it's not about doing something for the community. It's not about doing something to the community, but it's being part of the community. So I've got three daughters and a lovely wife, and we're part of this community. We live here. We get to know people. We have friends in this community. Our girls go to the local school. My wife's a governor at the local school, and so we're in it for the long haul. And so, what do I see the future as for this community? I think the future is always hard to forecast, isn't it? We're in the kind of the last phase of physical regeneration of this community, which means that we're probably in the last stage where we will have a mass influx of people into this community. And so I feel as though there's almost a stabilisation that will take place. And in that stabilisation, what I would like to see is young people's voices at the fore. I would like to see them influencing what happens in the community. I would like to see them doing things practically to make a difference to the community. And I'd like to see some of the amazing groups of people here. I'd like to see the Pentecostal Church, the Anglican Church, the shopkeepers, Witten Lodge Community Association, local councillors, lots of other people that I haven't mentioned. We have a little prayer group called Hope, and then Urban Devotion, which is the charity that I work for. We'd like to see all of us alongside local people, old and young, working together to make Pericommon a fantastic place, a place that isn't written off. I remember seeing a newspaper report when we've got an amazing chip shop across the road, and they just make really good chips, so can I get some free chips there next time? Thank you. But there was a newspaper report, and it said something like, "You would never expect something good in Pericommon." And that's just a ridiculous thing to say. And so I would like to see Pericommon be a place that no one would ever say something like that about. But actually people would say, Pericommon, that's a place where good people live, where good things happen.